is Terrible Tommy, Tom Esker. Terrible Tommy, Tom Esker. And this is Terrible Tommy, Tom Esker, here in the heartland, in the bunker, right here in north central Indiana, transmitting to the world. Insurgent Radio Network calling. This is the Insurgent Radio Network, and this is Terrible Tommy, Tom Metzger, right here in the bunker, right here in north central Indiana, where the snow is flying big time. We got about a foot of snow out there today. The roads are all clogged up, and I'm staying home, man. So it looks like we're going to keep getting some more for a while, too. But I guess a good share of the rest of the country is getting it, too. We're at P.O. Box 401, Warsaw, Indiana, 46581. That's where you send your donations for the radio show. And it's time for the January donation. Get it in here and any other donations, because we're sending out money here, man. I sent out some yesterday up to Leith, and some prisoners. I did. That's why I wasn't on the air yesterday. I was doing a lot of mail. Yeah. Don't forget to go up to resist.com and do your homework. If you're ever going to graduate from Metzger's University, you better get up there, man. Well, here's a letter just came in here. Hey, T.T., you're right about the cops being racist, but not on our side. At least most of them. Years ago, I was taking an advanced handgun course at a well-known training facility. There were several cops in the class, and every time a hostage target was shot, they would joke that the hostage was wearing a do-rag. I guess that means black type hair. I thought they were funny as hell, but kept my mouth shut. CTT, some of us listen to you. By the way, these classes are easy to get into if you've got a clean record and fly under the radar. And they are far superior to just plinking beer cans for target practice. Okay, thank you. Well, here's a nice note from David Tate. Got the interesting article you sent on the Green National Socialists and Walter Darr. And a week ago, my attorney said he received $40 from you and another from John. That's my son. Thank you. Seems the mongrel mind can simply never understand the natural truths we of a pure genetic mind see so clearly. To love one's race is to love the natural order instilled within the universe by the Creator. The two walk hand in hand. I should know by mid-January, if I'll be out of the hole or not. We'll let you know. Now remember, I told you the only reason he's in the hole is because due to some medication he was taking or something he was taking, they wanted a pee test for narcotics and he couldn't pee. So for that they threw him in the hole. And then when they moved him from one prison in Missouri to this new prison, they threw him back in the hole. So may the new year bring you and yours and ours the very best and our folk leagues closer. Our folk leagues closer to our day of victory. Faith, folk, and freedom. David Tate. I found a few things more about Mr. Dutton up there at Mercer County Jail up there in North Dakota. He's much more than I thought. He is a veteran of the Afghan War, the occupation, with 77% disability. So evidently, I was told that that had something to do with him acting up that night of the meeting at the hall, because he has to take medicine for PTSD, and if he drinks a beer on top of that, well, he's got a problem. So I think what we need to do is get those lawyers up there to separate the two trials, be the best for both of them, and have a trial for Dutton and a jury trial, and then a jury trial for Craig Cobb. If they try them together, they're going to try to throw everything that they, you know, crap from Craig Cobb, they try to throw that over on Dutton, everything on Dutton, they'll try to add that in on Craig Cobb. Plus, it doesn't hurt to run the bill up quite a ways, too. Now, what they're doing, like they always do, is they say, oh, you could do 40 years, Ben. But what they really mean is we're going to hit you, charge you with something that could bring you 40 years, and then we're going to plea bargain with you, and you're going to plea bargain for 1 year or 2 years or probation or something. That's the way these DAs operate. And I would recommend that they go all the way to a jury trial and not plead out. That is my opinion. But some people don't like to play Russian roulette like I've played it in the past. Well, here's a little scuttlebutt. Barbara Bush, who spawned those, he married that evil warmongering son of a bitch, and then spawned another evil warmongering son of a bitch, was sick in the hospital over the weekend, but unfortunately she lived. And I mean, I don't leave these mothers off the hook that are either married to these sons of bitches or they have kids that are just like them, because they never let our women off the hook at all when they're after us. Well, I was checking in this morning on what's going on over there in Britain, because we do have a few people who subscribe from Britain. And it's a sad situation, I got to tell you that. You know, this Labor Party, that's a joke. They say they're for labor, but they're the ones that want to open the floodgates into Britain. And now they're proposing a plan to, through the EU, to let 1 million Romanians and Bulgarians in. Well, even if they were all blonde hair and blue eyed, I mean, you know, there's a limit to what a country that size can handle. And so here's the Labor Party pushing it. Of course, the conservatives, the Tories, I guess you'd call them, they're in the background. They love it too because it's cheaper and cheaper labor. It's feudalism. Serf. We're back to Serf City. And which is just makes Britain just a big plantation. And all the white people are going to be niggerized and niggerboarded. And I mean, how much more can they stand? I mean, you know, there should have been 15 order groups in Britain over the last few years. The right wing, all they talk about is running for office. What a joke that is. Or having a parade in English Defense League or the BNP. Christ, you're far beyond that. It's unbelievable. You're way, way beyond that. There should have been civil war in England a long time ago. Well, that's what you get if you made a deal with Uncle Adolf, even though I disagree with a lot of things about Uncle Adolf. One of the big things I disagree with Uncle Adolf was worshiping the British Empire. That doesn't mean I'm against British people, and especially the working class, but the British Empire, which created so much problems in the world through mercantilism, which was a forerunner to capitalism. In fact, it was capitalism. Went all over the country, all over the world, grabbing countries and virtually enslaving the people there. Not for some great, wonderful thing for the white race, but for the rich and the ruling class to live great, wonderful lives and milk the countries of their natural resources to the point where all these countries end up hating white people because they put us right in the same bag as these ruling class people. And that's what we got to get people straight on. I get tired of hearing non-whites on the radio TV talking about whites like we're all in one bag. Well, we're not. The majority of us are poor or working class. And we have no power at all. Except what Mao used to say, power comes out of the muzzle of a gun. Incidentally, I'd like for you, if you get Netflix, or maybe you could find it at a video shop, the miniseries, it's about a 3-hour miniseries, it's called Carlos. And it's about Carlos, the freedom fighter, I would say, that he found out that you can't trust any government. No government can be trusted. Every government that really liked his services turned on him in the end and turned him over to the French. And then they wanted, you know, the CIA wanted to get him, but they didn't have any real concrete reason to grab him. But if you watch this miniseries, you'll learn quite a bit. It's pretty factual as far as I can see. But he was an effective boy. He was a lone wolf. Well, he did have his crews. And he said he was raised with Marxism because his parents were Marxist. But like I told a guy the other day, well, I'd rather deal with a white racist Marxist than a capitalist or the ruling class. Actually, ends up just being a struggle against the ruling class. You can call it whatever you want. You can call it libertarianism or anything, you know. But anyhow, get that and let me know what you think of it. There's a lot of intelligence information that you can pick up in that documentary that you may need one day. I know a lot of you are going to need it one day because it deals with all kinds of safe houses and transporting guns under the cover of darkness, all that kind of stuff, and moving from one country to another and surviving and so forth. I'm surprised I never saw it before, and at least I can't remember. I don't think I would forget something like that. So just remember, it's Carlos. The deal about the British and the Bulgarians and Romanians, don't forget the Africans, the niggers that are invading England every day, coming across in boats and through the tube, under the channel, every place. I mean, to listen to these British politicians talk, it's like, well, there might be a little problem here, but I don't think it's too great. And I don't think it's going to be a million, maybe 500,000. What the fuck? Got to get those people thinking like Kai Muros there, the Finnish guy talking, because I like this guy. He's got it pretty well figured out. And that's the direction to go, basically. But I still get some friction from people, especially Europeans or more in Britain about, oh my God, you used a piece of information, intelligence information from a race mixer. He's a communist or he's an actual Jew. Well, I make no apologies for that. I'm going to go wherever the information's at if I can trust it, I'm going to use it. Just like I'm going to play one for you now, another one from old Mike Malloy, because for the people out there who say, well, he's a race mixer, well, yeah, he is, and they say, oh, he never goes after the Jews. Well, listen to this and see what you think.
Israel has decided that the government of Israel, will pay for all abortions for women aged 20 to 33, regardless of the circumstances that resulted in the pregnancy. This starts in 2014. Health officials said this on Monday this week. They added, the Israeli officials added, that they hope to make eligibility for state funding universal in the future, not just between the ages of 20 and 33. Now, I just wonder what the Christian psychopaths in this country who are, the Christian Zionists, what do you crazy bastards think of this? Huh? Is this going to put you in a conundrum? Is this going to put you in a between a rock and a hard place, you Christian psychopaths? All of a sudden, Israel decides that they're going to fund all abortions. Up until now, these government-subsidized abortions for women of all ages were available in medical emergencies only, or in cases of rape or incest, sexual abuse. Women under the age of 20 or over the age of 40 were also eligible for abortion funding when the reason was personal. And despite this new funding, which was recently approved as part of Israel's state-subsidized so-called health basket for 2014, women will still have to appear before what is described as a state committee. Given the fact that it's Israel, there'll probably be a couple of female gynecologists before terminating a pregnancy. Now, this new rule opens it up for 6,300 more women to have a state-funded abortion in the year 2014. at a cost of about $4.6 million, or 16 million shekels. The cost of all state-subsidized abortions is estimated at about $6 million a year, or 24 million shekels a year. This is reported by Haaretz, Israeli newspaper of the liberal bent in that country. So I just wonder, what happens now to the Christian Zionists, the real psychopaths in this country, who insist on massive war and death and destruction in the Middle East in order for their savior to come back? I mean, this is how sick these bastards are. There has to be murder, chaos, Armageddon, death, destruction, fire, rape, killing, slaughter, in order for their Messiah of love to return to the earth. Isn't that, I mean, how twisted can a religion become? Wow. So, and they center all this, these Christian psychopaths center all this, of course, on this poor, benighted part of the world, the Middle East, Israel, Palestine. So what are you going to do now, you Christian evangelicals? What are you going to, I mean, come on, you're going to continue to support Israel? There will be slaughtering the unborn. There will be ripping fetuses from the wombs of women. Little preborn creatures. What are you going to do about that? Huh? You're going to continue to support them? Now, the support, of course, is ridiculous because the Christian evangelicals know, and the Jews of Israel, I think, also know, that the catch of all this support is that when this twisted version of their Messiah does come sliding down a huge mound of corpses, then all the Israelis, all the Jews, will have a chance to convert and accept Jesus Christus as their own personal savior. It's like having your own personal American Express card, right? Your own personal savior. And if the Jews don't do that, well, then these Christian evangelicals pull out the long knives and the slaughter begins. That's how sick and twisted this all is. So once again, you have members of the same Abrahamic religious font of insanity wanting to slaughter each other. It is church night, and that's the reason I bring it up. So, to your Christian evangelicals, put that in your smoke and pipe it. Israel to fund all abortions for women 20 to 33 starting this year. Oh, no. Yes. I thought I would toss it in. You can toss it right back out if you like. A CNN poll. Guess what is the most unpopular war in U.S. history? Huh. Which one? Which one?
The perpetual terror wars.
Yeah, that's too broad. They want a specific war.
Iraq 2.
No.
2.0.
Afghanistan. 2.2. Afghanistan. Support for the slaughter in Afghanistan has dipped below 20%. Isn't that just so American, so capitalist, I don't know. Let's do a poll on war. Well, it's dipped below 20%. Oh, my goodness. What are we going to do? Well, I don't know. That's according to a new national poll taken by CNN. It was released Monday. The CNN ORC International, ORC International. Love that name, ORC International. So the U.S.'s longest military conflict has become the most unpopular one as well. How do you gauge popularity for a war? What is a war? It's slaughter, murder, death, destruction, mayhem, blowing things up, killing children, women, men, old men, young women, old women, little kids, babies, the preborn, all of them slaughtered, beaten, killed, murdered, gassed, burned. How do you show support? Now, in December 2008, 52% of Americans in the same poll supported the war. Now it's down to 17%. December 2008, 46% opposed the Afghan war. Now it's up to 82%. And according to the CNN's polling director, quote, those numbers show the war in Afghanistan with far less support than other conflicts. Opposition to the Iraq war never got higher than 69% in CNN polling while U.S. troops were in that country. And while the Vietnam War was in progress, no more than 60% ever told Gallup's interviewers the war was a mistake. But the Afghan conflict now stands at 82%. And it's not a conflict. It's not a war. It's an invasion and occupation. That's all it ever was, an invasion and occupation by the United States, the same as what we then did to Iraq. Invasion, occupation, and in the process, murder, slaughter, killing, destruction, death, disease, disorder, disruption, all of it. For removal of nearly all the troops by roughly this time next year, and that can't come fast enough for me, for you, for probably a vast majority of Americans. So,
well, there you have it, that dirty little race-mixing left-winger. Sounded pretty good to me. Sounded damn good to me. That's what I mean. Like I said, I think on Saturday, if I was in World War One out there in no man's land, and I come across the cable that was stretched from one command post of my enemy to the other command post of my enemy, and I had my little diagonals on me, I'd cut into that line, put a speaker on, and listen. Like I say, half the stuff would be nonsense, maybe more. But in intelligence work, you're looking for little grains, little jewels, like the chickens out in the barnyard. They go through a lot of cow shit and horse shit to get a few kernels of corn. But those few kernels of corn keeps them alive, man. So anyhow, I hope there's some people out there that have been right-wingers are going to start getting the message. Because you're not going to go anywhere the way you're going. It's just doing the same thing over and over and over again, you know. Yeah, and I hope you're not into war, because the war hasn't done wars haven't done anything really positive for the white race. But as far as back as I can think, it's pretty hard to find a war that really benefited the working class of any country. All those wars that the Brits government fought over mercantilism and the whole bit and occupation, how much good did that really do the working class in England? They weren't doing that good. You know, in World War One, I was watching a film a couple of months ago where they were saying there were a lot of villages there in England after World War One. There was no men. No men at all. And so I imagine Germany was about the same. And of course, now with Mexico, the Mexicans come up here to work or to get on Easy Street or whatever. And same thing happens there. A lot of villages in Mexico, there's no men there. No men. So if you can tell me any good thing that's come out of any of these so-called wars to defend ourselves and all that kind of stuff, go ahead and do it, but I don't think you're going to have much success convincing me that any kind of modern warfare is good for the white race. I shouldn't say that, because it is good for one portion of the race, this 2-4% at the top, the ruling class. Wars are usually real good for them, even though they sometimes get it, like the Tsar and Russia and so forth. But in general, the rich get much richer as a result of war. And the working class either doesn't get any better or it gets worse. Now, going along with what I told you about this, getting information wherever you find it, and you have to go over it because, you know, a lot of information is planted and it's wrong. And but anyhow, now I'm going to read you a little bit from an article here I've got. And I might have read some of it to you before, I forget. But anyhow, and then you're going to have to figure out who in the hell said all this. They argue that the Jewish lobby groups like the American Israel Public Affairs Committee, AIPAC, have significant leverage over the executive branch of our government. That is to say, the White House and the president. Jewish power in the media, they say, gives Jews the unique ability to make sure the lobby's perspective on Israel is widely reflected in the mainstream media. Scholars Walt and Mearsheimer maintain that AIPAC is in particular has a stranglehold on the U.S. Congress. Well, Nitwick over there, premier of Israel, says the same thing. So did Sharon before him. Because of its ability to reward legislators and congressional candidates who support its agenda and to punish those who challenge it, unquote. Reinforcing this statement is the plain fact that Jews are only 1.7% of the American population, but 5.4% of Congress, 12 Jews in the Senate, and 22 in the House of Representatives. If you're counting, that's two of the three branches of government with an inordinate Jewish representation. And in the third branch, the judicial, of the 9 Supreme Court justices, 3 of them are Jewish. That's power. Let us look at how others have framed this Jewish political reality. Jewish political commentator Bill Maher stated flatly on his television show, quote, "Based on every statement I've heard from every Republican in the last 2 years, the Israelis are controlling our government," unquote. And when he said that, the studio audience gave him a huge applause. Mr. Mayor, Republican Senator Chuck Hagel, also, who is now the Secretary of Defense, wrote that, quote, "The Jewish lobby intimidates a lot of people up here in the Senate. But I'm a United States senator, and I'm not an Israeli senator," unquote. Now let us go to the White House and see what Vice President Joseph A. Biden says about this issue. He officially proclaimed to a gathering of Jews celebrating Jewish American Heritage Month, quote, "No group has had such an outsized influence per capita," unquote. And then referring to the American social and political trends and movements, and especially to same-sex marriage, he made the startling statement, quote, "I bet you 85% of those changes, whether it's in Hollywood or the social media, are consequence of Jewish leaders in the industry. The influence is immense." That influence is immense, unquote. So, pretty much whatever is happening now of any consequence, the Jews wanted it, willed it so. Right? Okay. Mr. Biden then said, "I think you vastly underestimate the impact you Jews have had on development of this nation." We owe you. Yeah. We owe generations who came before you, unquote. Mr. Biden spoke differently than Jews like those of the ADL, who have spent decades destroying the reputations of people who say exactly what the vice president concluded. There was no condemnation of Mr. Biden for having made bigoted and bizarre canards about Jewish control, and the ADL website to this day has made no mention of this stunning pronouncement from the number two man in the Obama White House. Did you hear any of this on the regular TV? Did you ever hear it on Fox TV? I didn't. All of the above have escaped the onus ADL label of anti-Semite because the speakers are Caucasian and have the ability to resist the charge. Well, anyhow, I'm going to quit reading because maybe you've guessed where this came from. This came from The Final Call, the newspaper of Minister Farrakhan. Now, are you saying that we should not use this as intelligence information or a weapon against our opposition? Is that what the right wing is saying, that since a black writer wrote this and under the cover of the Nation of Islam, we should throw it in the trash? Well, no, I don't think so, because it tells us things that we need to know. We need to know that in the black community, they're reading this stuff, and they're building up a head of steam about this Jewish problem. And so that's their bit, and they're doing it. We're doing our bit, and we're doing our bit. But don't tell me not to read newspapers or information from what you would consider our opposition, because they're not always totally our opposition. We got to understand that. That's something that the right wing of the racial struggle doesn't seem to understand and never did understand. However, there have been a few people in there that did their best, that's for sure. Well, let's see what's going on over here in Deutschland. Earlier this month, Germany's states, you know, they talk like everybody in these states got together and decided to do this, where it's just a few politicians. But anyhow, they launched a new attempt to ban the far-right National Democratic Party. These labels like far-right, I mean, you know, why don't they just say right-wing? They get these things like that, neo-Nazi, and the press love that stuff. So you're already cornered. Everybody in the National Democratic Party in Germany is painted with the same brush. With the NPD now apparently riven with internal strife, which probably agents of the government and the Jews have caused, or there's just a natural tendency of right-wingers to fight like hell, might it disintegrate of its own accord? The German National Party, NPD, is in a state of existential crisis, of which we in the press have helped. Its money supply has all but dried up. Well, maybe they're like a lot of our people. They're tired of the right wing, and they're going to do the lone wolf thing, and they're going to keep their money in their pocket, and what they can, whatever they can, they're going to send to somebody who's going to use it for lone wolf activities, like Terrible Tommy. I mean, you know, you spend hundreds of dollars in plane fare and so forth, flying across the country a couple of times a year to hear some, what do they call them? I forget what they call them now, but anyhow, they get up there and give a few speeches, and everybody goes rah, rah, and then they go home and nothing changes. Anyhow, it says its chairman has resigned, and it once again faces the threat of being banned altogether. Well, as far as I'm concerned, that would be a good thing, because then more underground activity and lone wolf activity and covert activity would be the way to go. Quote, 2013 was not a good year for the NPD, says Alexander Hausler, a specialist researcher on right-wing extremism. You know, anybody in the right wing is always extreme. Left wing, no, not so much. And the neo-Nazism of the Dusseldorf University of Applied Scientists. Now, this guy's making his living. He owes his living in studying the NPD and the far right, you know. Do you think he's got a vested interest in saying the things he does? Well, sure he does. The party is teetering on the verge of bankruptcy after a German Supreme Court ruling put an end to the supply of state funding. Wait a minute. Let's go back there. After a German Supreme Court ruling put an end to the supply of state funding. You get money from the government, and you think you're a radical political party opposed to the system, the way it's run in Germany, and you're going to get your money to finance you from the same people? Are you out of your mind? If you were really a thorn in their side, they would never have given you a dime. Technically, like all political parties in Germany that win over a certain amount of votes in the national and European elections, the NPD is entitled to receive funding proportional to the number of votes cast in its favor. However, the party has to pay a fine of 1.27 million euros, that's 1.75 million bucks, after submitting faulty accounting records, which will be taken directly from the funds it would have been entitled to from the state. Don't forget, boys and girls, my enemy, the state. The state is not your friend. No state is your friend. And this is, comes out very clearly in this mini-series about Carlos, the so-called terrorist. When he could give them something they wanted, they were all his buddies and gave him plenty of money and guns and everything else. But when the heat started coming down and they were changing their attitudes from Marxism more over to capitalism, then it was a whole different story. So the same people that befriended and financed were the ones who were out to kill him. Simple as that. Simple as that. Matters have not been helped by the NPD's dwindling popularity with the electorate. Well, that's the problem. You get you come up with 10, 15, get up around 20%, the system starts giving you trouble. But usually what happens, just like with that Uncle Adolf, the party vote was going down right at the time. If Hindenburg hadn't been cajoled into appointing him to that position, they would have been going downhill and probably might have disappeared, the National Socialists. But they were, the last vote they got at election time was, they were losing by tens of thousands of votes. So anyhow, this happens to all these kind of parties. And in September, they only managed to scrape 1.3% of the vote. Give me a break. Oh, man, that's terrible. That's terrible. So what the Germans want is something different. You either got to be totally passive or you got to be totally militant. There's no in-between if you want to get the votes or power. And, you know, that's the way it works. And now the NPD appears to be in the throes of a power struggle. What? Over what? Holger Apfel stepped down as chairman of the NPD after 2 years as a leader, claiming that he was suffering from burnout. Shortly afterwards, however, he left the party altogether. Well, that's, political parties tend to burn you out. I've been in two or three of them, and I burn out too in all of them. They're a waste of time. In this situation that we're in today, it's a waste of time. Well, I'll go on down here and see what. There's a lot of internal mudslinging going on. Well, that's typical right wing. And the left wing, too, does the same thing, says the Dusseldorf researcher Alexander Hauser. Holger Apfel wanted to steer the party in a new direction, Hausler explains, by offering radicalism but concealing it behind a bourgeois facade. Well, that's not too bad an idea. It's better than conservatism. Apfel's vision of the party was that it would no longer present itself as openly neo-Nazi. Well, that's becoming more covert, sometimes can win, sometimes not. I don't think it's done any good for the Republican Party here in this country. You got plenty of racists in the Republican Party, and there's always been a certain amount of National Socialists in the Republican Party, but it hasn't seemed to have done them any good. And if they can expose one once, the press can expose one once in a while, well, then the demo crazies get a lot of yardies. This made Apfel a lot of enemies within the party, says Hausler, because the NPD consists of a large extent of convicted violent criminals who clearly follow Nazi ideologies. Well, and who saw this route as a kind of betrayal of the party's orientation. Well, I think this is the old right, even though there are a lot of them are young people, that they want to flaunt their swastikas and flaunt their tattoos and flaunt their uniforms and flaunt their marches and all that kind of bullshit instead of operating in a clever, smart way. So there's the problem that we have here, you see. Same problem. The political scientist Wolfgang Gesenharter, also an expert on right-wing extremism, takes a similar view, saying, quote, "It seems to me that it's primarily members of the party's executive committee, Udo's pastors, for example, and others, who disapprove of this softening up of the NPD. Well, if the guy that was trying to change it was doing it for the right reasons, it wouldn't be softening it up. It would be hardening it up. Covert activity, cellular activity, lone wolf activity can gain you a lot of territory. A lot more than going to big meetings and drinking coffee and listening to a bunch of bullshit that you've heard 100 times before. Until now, Udo Pastors has been the NPD's deputy chairman and parliamentary party leader in the state of Mecklenburg-Vorpommern. He is regarded as one of the party's head hardliners and is infamous for his public diatribes. In 2009, he was convicted of hate speech. You see, you don't have any freedom if you can't say it the way you feel like saying it without being convicted of hate speech, and given a suspended sentence after insulting Turkish citizens by referring to them as semen cannons. Yeah, well, that's what these Mexicans are, semen cannons. Pastora will probably lead the NPD until it elects a new chairman next year, and Wolfgang Gesenharter says he may well secure the succession. Well, anyhow, I'm not going to go into any more of this because it bores me. It's the same old stuff. Same old stuff. They've got it over there in Europe in these national parties, and we've got it here in this country with the Stormfront type stuff, and I guess to a lesser degree VNN and so forth. So I don't know what to tell you. I'm more confident in the system itself providing us with an opening than any right-wing group getting any yardage at all. Well, now that the system has told us who we should think of as a man of the year, let's go see here what this guy's got to say. First, I thought of nominating Vladimir Putin. Pretty obvious, I would say. Not only did he stop the U.S. in its planned attack on Syria, he thereby also prevented an almost inevitable domino effect of having Iran drawn in and then even possibly Russia. Throughout the Syrian war, Putin showed an ironclad consistency in upholding the rule of international law and demanded that a negotiated solution be found. If we consider that the U.S. attack on Yugoslavia on behalf of the Kosovo guerrillas marked the official death of international law, the Russian move to stop the U.S. attack just days before it occurred was quite literally the resurrection of international law. Just for that, Putin deserves the Nobel Peace Prize, while Obama should be stripped of his. Putin also firmly resisted the Saudi offer of money in exchange for caving in on the Syrian problem. And even when Bandar threatened terrorist attack on Sochi, Putin held firm. When Netanyahu showed up in Moscow with basically the same demands, Putin also warmly welcomed him, smiled a lot, and then sent him home empty-handed. Putin also did an absolutely stellar job of beating back the Anglo-Zionist propaganda machine. He did not yield on the homo lobby's campaign to organize a pride parade in Moscow. Instead, he actually got a law passed making the propaganda of homosexuality amongst minors a criminal offense. He did not yield to the infamous Pussy Riot case either. Amnesty International called these creatures prisoners of conscience, but that did not prevent him from sticking them exactly where they belong, in the company of other petty criminals in a work camp. Nor did Putin yield even a millimeter to the liberal crowds who attempted to organize color-coded coup, similar to the one they later attempted on the Maidan Square in Kiev. When Western oil interests dispatched Greenpeace's activists to try and stop Russia from exploring and exploiting its Arctic shelf, Putin showed that he did not intend to yield to that sort of pressure either. Instead, he made sure that Russia would develop the means and capabilities to defend its national interests on the North Pole. Last but not least, he got two of his most formidable opponents, Berezovsky and Khodorkovsky, to plead for his mercy. The former was killed for doing so. The latter left Russia. All of the above proved to the Anglo-Zionists that Russia was no longer their colony, and that Russia had recovered most, though not all, of its sovereignty. That is a huge achievement, as for the first time since February 1917, a sovereign Russia appeared on the world map. And yet I think there is somebody which deserves even more praise, and whom I will nominate my man of the year in 2013. Simply put, if it had not been for the amazing courage of the Syrian soldier, Putin would not have had the opportunity to maintain his principled stance over Syria, simply because Syria would have been run out over by the Wahhabi liberators, and there would have been no more Syria to defend. Worse, the political and military line of defense would have been moved to the Iranian border and across the Persian Gulf. As for Hezbollah, it would have been facing a much more dangerous environment, stuck as it would have been between the Zionists on one hand and the medieval apes from the Gulf monarchies with their paid agents in Lebanon. True, the Syrian military did get help from the Iran Hezbollah, and probably by Russia too, but that one remained mostly covert. Still, the Syrian soldier was literally the cornerstone of the entire resistance in the Middle East, and if that Syrian soldier had been overcome or discouraged, the entire resistance would have greatly suffered. There's quite a bit more to this article, but I think you get my point. So, man of the year is, according to this writer, the Syrian soldier military. Okay, here's a quote that's interesting, and I'm a pessimist by nature. Many people can only keep on fighting when they expect to win. I'm not like that. I always expect to lose. I fight anyway, and sometimes I win. That's pretty good. Well, it looks like Russia Today, the TV network, is doing pretty good. Russia Today has clearly grown into the global anti-CNN, and its audience is huge. The network signal is carried by 22 satellites and over 230 operators, which allows more than 630 million people to watch the channel in more than 100 countries. RT America is available to 85 million people in the United States. In 2011, it was second most watched foreign news channel in the U.S. after the BBC World News. In 2012, it was the number one foreign station in five U.S. urban areas. In 2013, Russia Today has become the first TV news channel in history to reach 1 billion views on YouTube. According to the broadcaster's audience research board, between 2.25 and 2.5 million Britons tuned their televisions to RT during the second half of 2012, making it the third most watched rolling news channel in Britain, behind BBC and Sky News. Interesting. I watch it quite a bit myself. Watch it quite a bit. Of course, you always have to read between the lines, no matter who you're listening to. He says, my favorite shows are Crosstalk with Peter Lavelle. Mine is too. Breaking the Set with Abby Martin? Not so much. Truth Seeker with Daniel Bushell? Yeah. I like him, but I like Max Kaiser. I don't see him mentioned here. And he is very good, as far as I'm concerned, on the economic situation of calling out these rats in the banks and so forth. Well, that's it for today. We'll be back tomorrow, which is, I got to make sure because I'm always saying the wrong day, Thursday. No, this is Thursday. Be back tomorrow, which is Freya's Day. Yeah, Freya's Day. We got a new moon out there. No, that's a full moon, I believe. I always get that screwed up. Okay, 14-5, and just shut up and write the guys up there in Leith, because, you know, our people, friends of ours, or partly friends of ours, or whatever, screw up. I screw up. Everybody screws up. But there's no reason we couldn't give them a little bit of moral support. I sent a phone card up there to this young man. He can give me a call. And I've got talking to a couple of attorneys about the situation up there. See if we can help him out a little bit. It's too bad we can't fly in a top-notch attorney from L.A. or someplace, but we don't have that kind of money. I don't even have the kind of money to go on out there to the hearing, even though I'd sort of like to. 14-5 and shut up.
Feel great adventures of me, Tom Terrific, with Mighty Manfred the Wonder Dog. Terrific! I'm Tom Terrific, greatest hero ever. Terrific is the name for me, 'cause I'm so clever. I can be what I wanna be, and if you'd like to see, follow, come follow me. If you see a plane on high, a diesel train go roaring by, a bumblebee or a tree, it's me. When there is trouble, I'm there on the double, from Atlantic to Pacific. They know I'm terrific.
And this is terrible.